Point of View Future, der Podcast über Innovationen und deren MacherInnen. Für SchrittmacherInnen wie Sie.
So, servus and hello. Gabriel Gaps Jihan Stanley. Did I pronounce it properly?
Super.
Excellent. Second challenge, Frisch. That's the agency. Frisch with a V and not with an F. So
that's
basically
right.
For all our listeners, I had to do that now because I messed it up the first time. Sorry for that, Gaps. You are in the content of creating VR experiences. Let's very broadly put, I'm sure you can add several more amendments to that, what I'm saying. That's the reason why we're sitting here. You have a super international background. Basically, I would be interested why you ended up in Vienna, and spoiler alert, it has to do with love, I would assume, somehow. Good. Also talking, we're touching. Basically, I am always interested in people from the same ecosystem, and we somehow are in the same ecosystem, although not really. So let's try to figure out where our touching points are, where we disagree, where we agree, and also about this ethical and moral deep tech topics, because currently we're experiencing many, many different streams of what's happening in the deep tech world and what's happening with technology and how it influences us. But that's enough from my side. It would be a pleasure to hear a few words from you, and then let's dive into the different topics that are waiting for us.
Yeah, awesome. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation, Nis. And I mean, as you said, I mean, technology for me is a holistic thing. It's not just about the tech itself. It's not just about the content itself. But in the end, we're developing technology for humans. So it has different implications, right? I mean, not only from the tech perspective, but it's also about how to make sustainable technology, how to make something that is at the service of humankind and not the other way around. So in that context, as you said, my name is Gaps. I have been working in the field of applied immersive entertainment since 2015 through my own company that I co-founded together with my Austrian husband. Actually, this is a second piece of the spoiler, right? That this is why I'm here in Vienna. And I have been working in the field of VR since 2013. And in technology since, I can't even remember anymore because it's been more than 20 years that I have been involved in the context of creative industries. So besides my work, I will go back to that, like what I'm doing specifically for work, but I want to give an overview because everything is a bit connected, no? I'm also the Austrian Ambassador of Women in Immersive Technologies Europe, which is a nonprofit organization that supports women in tech, in immersive tech, because as you probably know, we need more representation of women in the industry for many reasons, right? Then besides that, I'm also the board member of Euromersive, that it's a European community that has a community as a service approach that is working intensively in creating guidelines and giving opportunities for both creators in the XR industry and also users about what does it mean to create technology for the well-being of humankind, at the service of humankind. And through that, I'm also having my own initiative that is XR Vienna, that is actually the Austria's first XR community of professionals. Cool. and users as well, no? Because this is what we wanted to do. We wanted to create this platform for dialogue between creators and users. Because what good is it if we develop technology that it either creates fear or misunderstanding in our audience, and also from a user perspective, it's I consider very important to actually know what expectations we should have about technology, what is possible now, what is possible in the future, and what will never be possible. And this only happens through dialogue.
So managing expectations definitely is one of the things when it comes to technology. You are using the word immersion several times. In your own words, what is immersion?
Well, for me, the best way to explain this is through an example. Like the first time that I was trying VR, the very first time, I was I was ready not to believe it. No, I was like, how is this going to quote unquote trick me into believing this is real, or how would it feel real? And then after 10 seconds of my brain fighting against it and kind of convincing me that this is not going to be real, I didn't even realize the transition between me not realizing anymore that this wasn't an experience, that I was there, fully there with my mind, my body, and my senses, right? And not only that, but also when I was dreaming about this experience, no? And when I remember, when I look back at this time, I don't remember as an experience that I lived, but a memory of something I did. And this is, for me, immersion. I mean, this is a power of using technology in this context to actually bring us to a place that we're fully there in our minds.
Thanks. I hope that helps several people to understand what, in this context, an immersive experience looks like. You know, I have some context in your ecosystem as well. And one of the things that bothers me is that I believe, and I might be wrong, right, that still the application, the so-called killer application, is not yet there. It might be because of the technology is not yet ready, or because there is no killer application. I don't know. I'm just being super provocative now, but what's your take on this?
Well, my take on this is that it's a combination of both factors. No, first of all, technology is not yet, in my view, technology is not there when it comes to comfort or when it comes to accessibility. I mean, if we think about it, like who are the countries or the regions of the world that actually have this technology accessible, right? I mean, if we only think of that, we can already imagine, you know, like how can we have a killer app that is designed for only a fraction of the population? Mm-hmm. That's one way that I see it. And of course, there's also, as you mentioned, the expectations that we are trying to unify what the whole humanity would want. And this can't be standardized. So I think this, the killer app, is something that is not just one, but it would have to be a combination of many killer apps. Mm-hmm. So as long as we still think about content as something that should be standardized, I think this is what we need to step away a bit, take a few steps back, and actually think, okay, what does it mean to have a killer app? What do I need besides technology or content? No, right now we're having a conversation that is either or. And I think the moment that we kind of fusion these two things, right? I mean, content and technology consider equally important. Like, this is the moment that we're going to start seeing a glimpse of the killer app.
If we discuss about the big elephant in the room, mm-hmm. then we already know that basically that product is good, but it has its flaws. It's too heavy in the front. It's not comfortable to wear. And so forth, and so forth, and so forth. So that means the acceptance of a human being of really wearing it, super low.
Yeah.
Super, super low. But yeah. I believe that smart glasses will replace smartphones in a certain point of time in the future. So there might not even be the necessity of a killer app. It just needs to substitute what currently is happening with a better connection to the human being.
No, absolutely.
So that's a bit... My understanding there. So no hidden agenda with the question. Just purely curiosity.
No, I mean something now with your insight. No, mm-hmm. I mean something that I find against the killer app, so to say, the way we're thinking now is that we have this contradiction, right? From my perspective, that from one side we the expectations are going towards a technology trying to fill all aspects of your life and having to be part of your life in every single way. Because of course, it's a good business model, right? I mean, you have as many users as possible and you make them stay for long periods of time using your solution, then of course, it's more profitable to work it that way. But I I personally don't believe that there's any humanity in it, mm-hmm. because the intentions are not human centered, as we discussed. It's more like more towards profit, so to say. So how can we think of a killer app that is actually meaningful for people, at least, you know? I find it hard to generalize, right?
That's
a
good point, because now I understood your point. A killer app seen from the eyes of the user and not in monetizing it from those who developed it. So, yeah, potentially, I don't know whether it's a suitable comparison, but if you go to emerging countries, they are leapfrogging. They don't go from landline to GSM phones. They are directly going from no landline into smartphones and doing e-commerce solutions. So they are way further developed than what we would assume. So I don't know the statistics anymore, but I was totally astonished when I was reading an article about how developed e-commerce and doing mobile business, and I mean it really, like with your smartphone, in on the African continent, it's breathtaking. So it shows us the potential. If something happens, you don't need the steps in between to leapfrog into the next stage. And that could happen, by the way, with the first pair of smart glasses that is meeting the demands or the requirements of a human that is wearing it at the end of the day. Whether it's full-time or just, using it like a smartphone, you have your glasses in your hair, and when it vibrates, it means a call is coming in. But I do share your sentiment there, that, and that's still one of the things. When you are accessing a computer and feeding your information into a social media platform, it's your decision.
Absolutely.
How much you want to unveil, how much you want to tell people, that's up to you. But if you have a tool or a device that is monitoring you, sitting on your nose, and now looking at your eyes, getting an understanding how you feel, then honestly, the set of data you are gathering there, that's pretty intimidating. And then the killer app could be different. Things could be reducing stress levels, you have a better work-life balance or whatsoever. And it's not necessarily a marketing purpose to understand what is gaps differentiating from Nils going down Maria Hilfer Straße, looking at jobs. What am I interested in? What are you currently looking for? So it's a bit walking the line.
Absolutely.
Somehow.
Absolutely. I mean, I choose not to see technology as good or evil. I mean, you touch a very important point there when you talked about countries in Africa, for example. I mean, I don't have too much knowledge in that regard, but I do know from South America, for example, because I'm originally from South America and from Paraguay, and I had this experience with technology since I was a child, that you're like, I had a very nerdy dad that was taking me to, like a Radio Shack.
Okay.
Back then. And it's always been about, for me at least, and what I see in my circle of friends, no, that technology has always been an enabler for social interactions, or for interactions like how to connect with other humans, or how to connect with information that other humans are sharing with you, or it has to do a lot in this context of South America, at least. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to use technology that is actually enhancing the way that I connect with people around me,
mm-hmm.
no? And I think this is the direction that I see that a killer app would have to take in order to be meaningful, right? Mm-hmm. Because in the end, what is the killer app? It's something that is meaningful for us, whether because it improves our connections as humans, whether because we have information reachable faster, it makes us more efficient, it makes us more productive. So in the end, it all translates to quality time.
Yeah.
Right? So I think this is, when it comes again to the intentions of a profit-oriented company, yeah. Right? I mean, of course, as a company, you also want to make money.
You have to.
Right? You have to. Otherwise, it's not a business.
Salaries and these kind of things.
Exactly. Yeah. You have a team, you have responsibilities, and you need to make money, right? But going back to the topic of ethics, right? Where is this line between what is the profit that I need to get versus what I'm asking from my users for that price? What do I have as a priority number one? Because profit is on one side, and what the user needs sometimes is not on the same page. So where do you draw the line? How do you see your users? You know, are they milking cows for your purpose? Or actually whatever you're developing, even if it's a profit oriented, how is this contributing to the betterment of humanity in the short, mid and long term? And I haven't seen too many, like, at least in my experience, though, like I haven't seen too many companies in the private sector that were actually focusing on this aspect meaningfully. Why do I say meaningfully? Because what I see a lot is, okay, you know what? We're giving all these headsets for education. We're going to a school and we give all these headsets, virtual reality headsets, so students and teachers can enjoy a new level of education. But okay, but what else did you do? You know, who is going to train these teachers to use this technology? Mm-hmm. How are the students going to have meaningful experiences if they haven't even touched this technology yet? So who is in charge of actually taking care of the media literacy, let's say, or the technology literacy in order for these humans to have a meaningful interaction with technology? So in the end, if you don't have this in your formula, then what is the difference between what you're doing versus a publicity stunt? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, do you just want to look good in front of people? Say, okay, like we are great at what we do because we think of humans. Great. I mean, this is not something that you should be proud of. This should be mandatory in your job description.
I think Peter Drucker was who said there ain't such things as a free lunch. So there are always costs, opportunistic costs attributed to things you do or don't do, or you get or you don't get. So if I get you right, then staying in the context of lunching, it's like we don't need the kitchen, we need the recipe.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, we need the famous case of not the fish, but the fishing game.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. I mean, this way, we also understand how not only identifying the challenges that our users have, but also how this challenge can not only be solved, but how it can evolve in time. And this is something that, of course, a research can tell you something like this, and it's a controlled environment, and it's, you know, a certain number of people. But this wouldn't really be the whole picture. It would never be.
Huh? But would you disagree or agree rather that sometimes it's not even a company that develops something that decides how it's used on the market? You also have the users that suddenly create a dynamic that leads into a different aspect. And I have to admit that I tend to say that at the end, it's the user's decisions whether or not to give away information or personal data or whatsoever. So I do exactly know what you mean, but I think that this dynamic from the user is something that's very tricky to steer away from, something you might not be okay with at a company. And we know that many technologies out there have been hijacked by users into whole different fields and areas. So I think sometimes, because I believe in the good of people or of humans, I would say that sometimes you can't plan that long ahead of what your technology is going to do with those using it. So I truly believe it's a super delicate topic, and there is not the only way how to deal with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, what comes to mind with what you're saying is that there's, of course, the topic of transparency. Mm-hmm. And there's also, from a user perspective, you can't want or not want something that you don't know. So this is this is linked with transparency, right? Yeah. Because again, going back to what you said about, okay, there's a responsibility from the user as well to demand certain things to happen, right? But sometimes it's kind of tricky to demand something that you don't know that you need or don't need,
right? Fair point, yeah.
So as you mentioned, I traveled a bit around the world. I have the perspective both from a country like Paraguay in South America, and I also lived in the US. I also, and now I'm living in Europe for quite some time, right? So when I ask my dad what he thinks of his privacy, for example, he says, I honestly don't care what they're taking away from me because I have nothing to hide. Mm-hmm. So it's a, he doesn't know any better, let's say, because I, again, going back to the media literacy, right? I mean, like, how can we know that our privacy is at stake if we are never mentioned what is implied when we use these technologies? So again, going back to the topic of transparency, right? I mean, I think it's a teamwork, let's say, between the content creators and the hardware manufacturers to actually reach levels of transparency. In, I mean, not in the way the technology is built, mm-hmm. per se, because of course, at the end of the day, we're a business, right? I mean, like, we all have a certain way to design our hardware or experiences to gain a competitive advantage, mm-hmm. so to say. But at the same time, I do see that users won't be able to understand the implications of the technology they're using if this is unknown to them. You know, mm-hmm. like here in Austria, for example, I see a lot of awareness about what privacy means, the yeah. value of privacy, the how important it is to protect your rights, not only as an individual user, but also as a whole, no, as a society, mm-hmm. no. But because there was this time of talking about it, there was this time of saying, okay, I don't want to be profiled, you know? What does it mean to be profiled? What does it mean, this information that I'm sharing for free? Like, why is it for free? How important is it?
Yeah.
I mean, there was this dialogue, this rich dialogue for a very long time, and this is a priority, right? But at the same time, sometimes I feel as gaps, yeah. you know, that here we have this, in a way, privileged position that we have the time to talk about these things. We have the resources, we have the means to be able to extend the importance of these conversations. But how can you put this in the context of, I don't know, a developing country, for example, yeah. that your main mission is to work, to get enough resources, to sustain your family, and to be able to live a life that is as efficient as possible in order to just make ends meet.
Yeah.
No? So how do you reach this level of, okay, I'm curious about what they're taking away from me if you don't even have time to think about these yeah. things?
So basically, if you democratize the monetizing aspect, and you as a user, if you knew what is happening with the data you provide without Gertly knowing, if you could then take the decision to say, I sell that set of data, and I get something in return, might be a naive approach, but potentially that could be somehow one or the other side of the medal. Because my personal, that's now Nils speaking, I think that if you limit too much, mm-hmm. then you are also suffocating innovation. And I think it's really walking the line, what are you willing to sacrifice? I mean, that's one of the things from tragedies mankind usually learned the most. I'm not so sure whether that's still true or not. But you know, when terrible things happened, like the Challenger explosion 1986, there were takeaways how to make technology, space flights more safe and so on. And that had an impact also on how we did things. The Apollo mission that failed, as an example, the failure mode effect analysis, FMEAs, that was basically in the innovation took place then to how could that be avoided? We have it with autonomous driving. We have it potentially now with AI. So without, I'm just saying sometimes sacrifices, and I'm not talking about human lives, that's, I don't want to go that into that direction, but some sacrifices apparently need to be done. The question is always, and that's again, I would really love to hear your thought on that, is when does someone or a body, a governing body, a government steps in to say, now we need to do something. Would that be the solution? Or do we rely on the fact that humans will figure it out and then start saying, no, I'm not prepared anymore to give away data? Well, if you say, I don't know that I'm giving it away, then I can't revolt against it. So that's kind of a double bind. But when do we have to start regulating or building frameworks?
No, that's a very good question. I mean, let's start by what you talked about. How are we sure that we're not limiting innovation, right? Because what my experience working all these decades in technology is that, I mean, there's no risk-free innovation. I mean, if we truly want to innovate, there's also a big amount of risk involved in what we're doing. That doesn't mean let's be reckless, but it's also, as you said, embracing the fact that there will be some risks involved. Mm-hmm. What do these risks mean is a whole different story. And it's a lot more of a complex question, right? So how can we be sure that we're not hindering innovation by imposing restrictions? You know, what does it mean, these restrictions that we are putting on the table, and why? No? And also, I think it has to do a lot with like several factors. Like, first of all, is a collaborative approach. Like, I haven't seen enough collaborative approaches from like big tech, so to say we set the standards. Maybe I'm wrong, you know. This is why I'm curious to also know your perspective on this. No, like, it feels sometimes that there's many islands working on amazing things, but I fail to see the bridges. Mm-hmm. No, so where is the conversation in that? And I can give an easier example, no? Like, we're talking about regulation here. Like, when do governments have to step in and say, okay, where do we go from here? If you think of the Olympic Games, no? In like the athletes, for example. I mean, we have certain regulations when it comes to consumption of substances, for example. Mm-hmm. Why? Because we all agree that the Olympic Games was going to be a display of what naturally a human being can do with their bodies. And this is why there's no brain enhancing drugs, or there's no performance and enhancing drugs. Even though, I mean, who determined this? You know, like, we set the rules for this. Mm-hmm. And we said, okay, this is it. Whoever doesn't follow these rules, then it's not allowed, let's say, to participate in these games. Mm-hmm. No, but it all started with defining the rules.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So of course, society and humanity is a lot more complex than a zero sum game, right? But it kind of follows the same logic, right? I mean, like, we need to understand what the rules of the game are. But, right, today, and we have to be willing to iterate what we are assuming right now. You know, like, isn't it impossible to not iterate what we're saying now, given the information that we're gaining throughout time?
But what you were mentioning, Olympic Games, I think it's a perfect example. Yes, the rules were set. Mm-hmm. And what happened then? People were trying to cheat to get an advantage by using any kind of performance enhancing drugs, name it anabolica / steroids, and so forth. And they got more and more creative. And then, I'm not sure whether this is still the case, but there were calls for making something like the enhanced games, where you can take whatever you want. And, you know, you make performance enhancing drugs. You can do whatever you like, and the best may win, not the best genetically or who trains the most, but who is just the fastest, which is, it just tells us every time that's kind of also a human, is it a flaw or is it part of our creativity and our troubleshooting, solution-oriented being? I don't know. But whenever you set rules in a competitive environment, bet on it, people are trying to find ways not play according to the rules, you shouldn't get caught, to win it. So, and at the end of the day, I think also economics is about winning It's like who has a dominating position, who has the technology that gets disseminated the most and used the most, and by that helps you to earn a lot of money. So I think that brings us somehow back to what I think. I don't know whether it was me or you, it doesn't matter. But whenever humans are involved, it gets freaking complex. And it's sometimes super hard to find that red thread that say, oh, well, yeah, that's how it's supposed to be. I think this is my a bit of my opinion. As I said, the human being is really the most complex organism on this planet. And regulating the humans, I don't know, did that ever work? I honestly don't know. I think that's a good thing for me to do in the afternoon, to Google around a bit and to figure out whether this worked in an environment. I can't remember, honestly. So to find a way in that complexity, that's a truly challenging thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm reading a very interesting book. I mean, I'm reading it for the second time, actually, that is called The Battle for Your Brain. It's from she's many things, no? But Nita Farahani is the name of the author. Mm-hmm. And she comes from a law background, but she also comes from creative background, psychology background. I mean, she makes a very nice holistic approach to what it means to have cognitive liberty, for example. This is like the main topic of the book, no? But one of the topics that she was talking about, like, she was actually the one who mentioned the comparison with the Olympic Games, no? Because in the Olympic Games, you have sports like chess, no? And she's talking about, like, specifically about whether or not it's ethical to enhance our brains, no? So what's... sticking to the same example of the Olympic Games, no? I mean, what is one of the main reasons why we have this rule, let's say, of not enhancing ourselves with artificial substances is because of the health risks as well, that you have to protect the athletes, right, from falling into those risks. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this is also not black and white, right? Because if you think of self-determination, right, I mean, why wouldn't be... we as humans able to decide on our own what the risks are, right?
So who are you telling me what I am allowed to do
exactly
with my brain / my body?
Exactly. So it is the right for self-determination, right? I mean, going back to the topic of brain enhancements, right? I mean, if we decide that we take a brain-enhancing a drug. I mean, for me, this is a very interesting topic because I have ADHD, for example. I had it like my whole life. But actually, there's this stigma, right, about, okay, why are you taking this medication? I'm medicated, no? So they're like, you're just taking it for enhancing your brain. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm taking it to live a better life, right? I mean, like, I need... in order to reach my productivity at the end of the day and to build my memories, I need this, right? So I think there's a lot of, in going back to the topic of technology, you know, there's still this stigma, right, that everything that is an enhancement besides your natural abilities to do something or to enhance your life, if it doesn't come naturally, then it's something wrong. No.
But you know, what you were mentioning is like, that's a flaw of society or whatever. People are stigmatizing things they don't understand.
Exactly.
That's also, unfortunately, part of, is it society? Is it human being? I don't know and I don't care, because I despise things like being dogmatic and stigmatizing people without knowing what it truly means. So people are super quick in charging upon things they have not a rat's ass idea about. So this is kind of, I think we have to get over that, because this is something we cannot change, except in the face of transparency. And I love it that you were so open, because that's one of the points that kind of triggers me whenever I mean, curiosity should be something that drives us and triggers us. That also means what does it mean? Oh, well, you know, it's like with burnout, or it's with depressions. Honestly, it's a sickness.
Exactly.
Point taken. It's whether you break your leg or you are in a depression is exactly the same thing. But people, due to whatever reason, are not capable of accepting the one thing, because I don't know, potentially they cannot touch it, or it's stigmatized. It's like, oh, it's like, oh, take 2 weeks of vacation and you're going to be fine. And that's BS. We all know that. So that's I think this is potentially my key takeaway, transparency.
Yeah.
You know, if I work with you and you know you have ADHD, Christ's sake.
Too many letters, right?
Too many. And sometimes you shortly slip away or whatever, and I know it. What's the issue? As soon as people start making interpretations, then it gets tricky.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's also, you were mentioning the, why do we have a certain image of technology or enhancements or perception? Thank you. I think in this case, I can think of fear as a double-edged sword, no? Because fear can also make us aware of, you know, the implications of the decisions that we're taking, but also it could give us kind of, you know, a showstopper, let's say, and creating ideas in our heads or expectations about something that may or may not be true, no? So the famous of, was it fear mongering?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think this leads to polarization as well, right? I mean, to say, okay, this is not good for us, or this is great for us, right? But we know throughout the whole history of humanity that there's no such thing as one side of the spectrum or the other, right? So as you said, I mean, transparency also goes into the formula, right? I mean, what does it mean to be transparent, right? It's embracing the fact that there's not an either or, right? And if you know what you're doing, and if you, meaning, if you know what you're doing, meaning that, okay, you have a certain motivation, let's say, to build the solutions that you're building, or even if it's just like, okay, we want to make a lot of money, great, you know, but we should be the ones deciding whether or not we support these initiatives or this mentality or these goals or not.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think fear is a very, very bad consultant in taking decisions. And I think transparency is definitely helping a lot to understand things better, because we humans usually are fearing change or scared of change or the unknown things. But transparency leads that you understand better what's happening. So that might reduce the fear factor
in
it. And still, FOMO, fear of missing out, is a positive thing. I never understood that. It's like, okay, whatever. Well, if people have FOMO regarding our podcast, that would be awesome. That's the exception of FOMO being a positive thing. But if I make shortly somehow try to not wrap it up, not summarize, but I don't think the two of us, we have a solution.
Not really. Not really, at least not from my side. I wish, but, you know.
But it starts with the discussion, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that's the crucial part. And you were mentioning right in the beginning, there are different committees, there are organizations, there are institutes, there are work groups, you name it. And I think dealing with things we are not yet sure how they are going to be in the future, it starts with talking about it, creating an understanding for each other's fears, hopes at the end of the day, and it creates transparency. So I definitely take with me that transparency should be a North Star.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing for all of us dealing with potential life-changing technologies. So I really like that because it helps me also a lot to make some judgments on future things. And I like transparency a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So let's try to make that our North Star metric. Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, transparency is what gives our users the freedom to choose.
Yeah.
So everything starts with feeling free to choose, right? Self-determination, what we were talking about, self-determination. I mean, we can't expect, in my view, to just say what we want to say in order to attract the amount of users that we want. Because in the end, we are not creating value. We're not creating sustainable technology because we're there for the fast buck, no?
Yeah.
So good things take time.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
and we also have to get used to it.
And we have to get used to it, exactly. Yeah. And this is, it, as you said, this is starts first of all with an open dialogue to embrace the fact that we may not have all the answers yet and also that there's not one-size-fits-all solution.
True.
So this is, and it's not just using, I don't know, for example, let's be transparent from now on, and this is going to be a solution to all our problems, right? I mean, it would have to be, first of all, a collaborative and iterative process.
Yeah.
Secondly, there's different factors that are involved because what does it mean to have self-determination in different contexts, for example? As you said, humanity is very diverse. So what would it mean to offer this to our users on a global way, on a global level? No? So I was thinking about how to improve this, right? And for me, at least there's like four key ingredients, mm-hmm. let's say, that can form this transparency in a meaningful way. Like one is the media literacy. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to be sure our users understand the implications of the information they're giving away or not,
mm-hmm.
or offer alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
To I don't know, for example, I don't know what you mentioned about the our data, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if we can license our data, for example, for the time that we want to share our data, and then we can always revoke that, that is giving our users self-determination.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving them the freedom to choose. Okay, do I want to share this? Maybe I want to share it for a while, and maybe I don't feel comfortable sharing it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of the transparency process,
yeah.
right? And it's also giving our users agency
right.
and empowering their mm-hmm. decisions. Now, the second point is accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
No? We cannot take assumptions just based on a certain segment of the population, right? I mean, and what does it mean to not having accessibility is that we might be creating inequality just by the fact that we are offering a certain technology with one approach in the world, right? And we don't want that.
Yeah.
And third is diversity. It's a word that has been overused lately, but what does it mean, right? I mean, diversity is not just like put more women to the formula and make it work, right? I mean, it's truly understanding that the richness and the value of a technology lies in the voices of many.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to how are we solving our problems, how are we customizing our solutions in order to bring the most amount of benefits for mm-hmm. our users while making our technology sustainable and how to make it grow with time mm-hmm. and improve with time. And last but not least, the iteration of our solutions. I mean, we can't live on past glories.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of humbleness as well from our side as creators and in general, and I would say not only creators in the industry, but also for all of us to say what we know today may not be valid in the future and be humble enough to embrace that fact, admit it, and move on to the future.
Thanks very much for that guide. But the time for self-determination in this podcast is now over. Because we come to the section word wrap, where I ask the questions and you have to answer them.
Are we?
Yeah, so this is as always the last part of our podcast.
Okay.
And you just builded me a bridge I could easily cross. Let's say, let's go to the word wrap. 15 questions here.
Okay.
Every one of them is easy to answer. There is nothing in it that has a hidden agenda. It's straightforward, and I really would appreciate it if you just tell me what's top on your mind. Try to be crisp in the answering part. So if you're all set, we just would shoot the first question. You're ready?
Okay.
Good.
My brain sometimes is like running the opposite direction of the word I want to say. So I have to, you know, otherwise the anxiety mode is activated. I'm like, gosh, don't say the opposite thing of what you're thinking.
You can always use the virtual buzzer and go to the next question.
Yeah, exactly.
As well,
okay?
Good. Question number one. Do you believe in the metaverse?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That was crisp. One word to describe your first VR experience.
But it's always two words. I was going to say like almost a spiritual experience.
Virtual reality or augmented reality, you have to pick one.
I choose mixed reality, so I get both.
Best of both worlds, right? So what's your pump-up song before a big presentation?
The conversation with my daughter.
Understood. The last book that you read and loved?
It's called The Hidden Spring from Mark Solms.
Thank you. Now, if you could teleport yourself and anywhere, where would it be?
Mars.
All right. I did not see that coming. So which tech personality would you have dinner with?
Never meet your heroes, you know, that's the thing, you know.
That can be super disappointing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd rather live with the fantasy.
Then we take that as an answer.
Super.
A fictional character you would love to bring into the real world with VR.
Wow. Of Joseph from The Handmaid's Tale.
Okay. Cats, dogs, or robots for company?
Robot cat.
Robot cat. Ooh, early bird or night owl? When are you most creative?
Actually, early bird.
Okay. So it's a super interesting discussions now about diversity, who works when, and who is most creative at which time.
Yeah.
And why we start at 9 and work till 5. Also an interesting topic. So the most unexpected item in your work desk drawer?
I have a Mario Brothers banana.
What? Okay, that second thing I didn't see coming. One tech gadget you can't live without?
My smartwatch.
Mm-hmm. And what's your secret talent no one knows about?
Well, my super talent is talking a lot, but apparently it's inspiring for a lot of people. So I guess it's a win-win.
Excellent. If you weren't in tech, what would you be doing?
What would I be doing? I would work as a neuroscientist.
Okay. And the
if I
one...
could dream, no.
Say again?
If I could dream, no.
Oh yeah, that's part of our existence, dreaming. The one Austrian dish you would recommend to everyone.
The what? Sorry?
The one Austrian dish.
Ah, Austrian dish?
Yeah.
The Lyric noodle soup.
Oh, I had that yesterday.
Oh!
Yeah, yes. Love it. Love it. So that's basically coming to the end. Thanks very much for being here.
Yes, thank you so much.
It was truly, truly inspiring. And it was different, and it was in English. I think we made it okay. I hope so, but the audience then has to judge on that. So big thanks again, Gabs. And as a last question, and then I'm done with it, is like, would you have a tip for someone to join our podcast?
Okay, so I will strongly recommend you talking to Isabel, that she is the president of Euromersive, and she's also involved in other brilliant initiatives on a European level and actually on a European Commission level as well. She's based in Brussels, actually. And she has been part, for example, of the Virtual World Society. She's an advisory board member there. She's also the European director of Gatherverse, that is an initiative from the US that also has this community first approach. So they're very much humanity centered when it comes to technology. And through Euromersive, she's also involved in an initiative called Human Capital Initiative, that is an initiative that is raising $3 million for startups with the topic of humanity first.
Okay.
So it has to do with access to technology, education, protection, and equality for all. So I think she has the perfect balance between technological understanding and also a humanity-centered approach.
We'll get in touch with her and then we will see. Potentially you can help us.
She's a wonderful person as well.
Awesome. If the recommendation comes from you, I truly believe it.
Oh, thank you so much. You're so kind.
Thanks very much, Gabs. Have a great day. And thanks for being with our podcast.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Nils. It was a pleasure to be here.
Das war Point of View Future, der Podcast über Innovationen und deren MacherInnen. Danke fürs Zuhören. Bitte abonnieren, teilen und bewerten Sie diesen Podcast. Wenn auch Sie Innovationen haben, die Sie mit unserem Publikum und uns teilen wollen, freuen wir uns, von Ihnen zu hören. Alle Links finden Sie in unseren Shownotes.